Have fun.
Good evening. My name is Keith, and I'm an alcoholic. And tonight I'm going to be talking about 10 and 11, because it's like he was saying, I'm going out of town, so I won't be able to go to the end of the month. But so tonight we're going to be talking about 10 and 11. And I've been in deep reflection for the past couple weeks, but today especially, because tomorrow is my 11th year anniversary. And I don't say that to brag, but thank you for that. But 11 years ago today, I was in a hotel room wanting to die. And so I've been reflecting, and like it was just came and hit me of how blessed I am and how blessed we are. And so I get a phone call from a friend of mine who wanted his grandson's locked up in the Conti. And he wanted to know if I could go down and talk to him because he might be trying to come into our place. And so before I came here, that's where I went. I went to the county, and I met this guy, and the guy is just like me. He's 33, or 34 actually, just turned 34, and just got arrested with possession, and, you know, and I'm sitting through the glass talking to this guy, and I'm just thinking back like, man, I was here 11 years ago, and so I'm talking to this guy, and, you know, it was surreal, but it was awesome because as I'm talking to him, I'm telling him a little bit about me, and I was telling him how I was just where he was, and we're talking about the SAP program, that's like substance abuse program in Broward County. It's 6 months, and when I was in there in the SAP program, I wasn't serious about recovery. I just wanted to get off probation, so I did that, but I wasn't really serious about recovery. And I'm talking to this guy, and, you know, I felt his heart, and you know, he was just saying like how he wanted to die and how he didn't want to be in there and all this stuff. And I was like, there's a way out, my friend. So that was pretty cool. And then I'm thinking about this meeting. And again, I don't like doing this, so I'm thinking about what am I going to say. But then I'm just like, you know what? God's got this. Because it's been a rough couple weeks, and I'm just some light coming at the end of the tunnel now. And yeah, so I'm a very blessed man. So tomorrow morning when I wake up, I'm going to be 11 years old. And 11 going on 41. But so we're at the 10th step, you know, and continue to take personal inventory when we're wrong, promptly admit it. So we did a lot of work up until this point, or I did a lot of work, so to speak. And so I want to give you my experience about this 10th step. And again, you know, you hear the promises read at every meeting. The 9th step promise is read at every meeting, a lot of meetings, and they're awesome promises. But this 10-step promise is amazing. Like, talk about, for an alcoholic or drug addict, this 10-step promise is amazing. And so I'm going to read that to you real quick, and then we get into 11, 10 and 11. And the longer I'm sober, like, the more I realize how precious this gift is. And me and Allie were talking on the way over here, and, you know, how we shouldn't put people on pedestals and all that stuff. And it's true, like, I'm just a drunk, you know what I mean? And the stuff that's going around and being said about a certain individual is just heartbreaking. But that was me, you know what I mean? Like, that was me before I got here. I character assassinated people. Hell, even last Wednesday, Allie called me on some stuff that I was doing from the podium. And I wasn't being facetious or mean when I was talking to them about what happened, but I said something about a lady, and I wish she was here tonight so I could make amends to her. But I was talking, because we're starting over in my home group, we're starting over the step series. And what we do in the introduction is I break down what we're going to do and all this stuff. And I started talking about doctor's opinion and stuff. And I talked about how important God is and how this is all about finding the God of your understanding. And I let the newcomer know, like, I don't sugarcoat that. Like, the deal is, it's God. And so I was talking from the podium, and I had said something like, in other parts of the country, they don't believe in God and they don't study the book, and it's just meeting makers make it. And she lovingly told me after the meeting that, you know, I shouldn't have done that. Like, I'm putting this lady down, but that wasn't my motive for saying it. But when she broke it down to me, it was. And I say that to say, I'm doing what people are doing out there. I'm just sugarcoating it to make it look like it's better than, but it's not. I'm no better than those people out there spreading rumors about people. So I owe that beautiful lady in men's when she gets here. So we're talking about step 10, you know, and, you know, you've been here and you heard my story. And like I said, 11 years ago, tomorrow I got sober. But that week leading up to that tomorrow, I was in a hotel room in Pompano Beach wanting to die. Like, I was a coward, but I couldn't kill myself. But I literally wanted to die. I couldn't stop. I couldn't stop starting. I didn't know. My best thinking got me to that hotel room in Pompano Beach. And God put me with some men armed with the facts about themselves in this program. And they got me into the book, and I find out what my problem is in the doctor's opinion, more about alcoholism, and there's a solution. You know what I mean? So you don't have to hear my story to get that information. That's your own truth. And if that doesn't live for you, then the book says go out and try some more controlled drinking or whatever. But that was my truth. And then I got to step two, and again, I don't have to believe in God right then, because I didn't. If I sat here and told you, I believe right away, that'd be crap. I didn't believe in God at the time. He was a cosmic bellhop, so to speak. Once I was in trouble, God, get me out of this, I'll never do it again. But once he got me out of it, I started taking over again. That was my relationship with God when I got here. So that's done, you know, powerless power. Then we get to step three, made a decision, turn our will, which is my thoughts, and my life, which is my action, over the care of God that I understood him. I talked about this a couple weeks ago. When I first got here, that didn't mean anything to me. That just meant that I'm going to do the rest of the work. The longer I'm sober, that's like the most important step. And I'll talk about that in a little bit. But that's me turning my will and my life for the care of God every morning I get up. I'm doing that. Because when I start taking over, bad things happen. So I did that. I did my four-step inventory. It's not my autobiography. It's just a catalog of who I was when I got here. My resentments, my fears, my sexual harms, my other harms. That's it. It's not that difficult. And I got to see who people got when I showed up on the scene. And I didn't like what I saw. And I looked at that and I saw, of course my life is screwed up given who I was. I was a taker. It was all about me, selfishness, self-centeredness, you know. I'm a man that when I came in here at 35, I'm thinking that I'm not hurting anybody but myself. But I aged my mother 20 years because she didn't know if I was dead or alive. And everybody else that was close to me, that's who I was. Selfish and self-centered, not caring about them or anything. Then I did my fifth step with my sponsor. Because that man had something I wanted. I saw qualities in him that I wanted. And I told this man everything. That's where the life story comes in. Not the fourth step, but the fifth step. And this guy held me accountable, you know. And when I started the yeah buts, he wasn't having it. He was making me take ownership of it. And I got to see that I came in a victim. It was your fault while my life was in the toilet. But once I saw the truth, I authored everything that happened in my life. Everything. So I know myself a little bit better, but nothing's changed. I'm still the same person. If you were here a couple weeks ago, I did that demonstration with the water and the dark coffee or whatever. That was me, the murky, dark water. Any definition I've ever heard of God cannot dwell in a cesspool. And that's what I was, a living, walking, breathing, talking garbage can when I got here. So just because I did a fist up, I'm still that person. I'm still that garbage can. So 6 and 7 is all about change. That's a lifetime journey. I talked about that. I'll be doing 6 and 7 for the rest of my life because my book tells me I'm not rendered white as snow because I get sober. You know what I mean? I still have character defects. I'm still a broken man, not as broken as I was 11 years ago, but they still come back, just not as glaring as before. And it's important that I become somebody different when I go to make these amends. And we talked about that. You know, I told you about my amend process last week. I gave you my experience with that. I didn't just read it from the book. You know, I did some things that I wasn't proud of, but I also went back and made amends for those things. Turn myself into the police, which we don't do where I'm from, you know. Financial amends. Didn't have a license for 12 years. I didn't drive when I was here, you know. I stopped doing the things I used to do. And that was all through my sponsor and this other person that is near and dear to me. So we got that done, you know. I went home, made amends. So the promises started coming true, right? I'm having this new peace, this new freedom, this new happiness. Fear is no longer running me. So we read about that. So it says this, after you read the promises. If we are painstaking about this phase of our development, meaning the ninth step, we'll be amazed before we're halfway through. We're going to know a new freedom and a new happiness. We will not regret the past, nor we should shut the door on it. Like, my past was running me before I got to Alcoholics Anonymous. It ran me when I first got in Alcoholics Anonymous, so I made those amends. Because we will comprehend the word serenity and we will know peace. Given who I was when I got here, that's amazing stuff. No matter how far down the scale we have gone, we will see how our experience can benefit others. That feeling of uselessness and self-pity will disappear. We will lose interest in selfish things and gain interest in our fellows. Self-seeking will slip away. Our whole attitude towards life, our whole attitude and outlook upon life will change. Fear of people and of economic insecurity will leave us. We will intuitively know how to handle situations that used to baffle us. We will suddenly realize that God is doing for us what we cannot do for ourselves. Are these extravagant promises? We think not. So then, you know, that lived for me. You know, I was starting to feel that. I was starting to get that. But the book talks about more work, keep work, faith without work. So then it says that. It says this. This thought brought us to step 10, which suggests we continue to take personal inventory and continue to set right any new mistakes as we go along. Now, I don't know where it came from, but I heard it said people, like, they do the 10-step at night, their 10-step list at night, right? That's not what my book tells me. And that's not what I was taught, you know, because I was taught that, you know, the 10-step is a spot check inventory. Like, when I get up in the morning, I go to work, I work at 6 in the morning. If I get a resentment at 6:35, you mean to tell me I got to wait all night and all day till I get home to do my little checklist? No. So the book's talking about do this spot check inventory. And I do that right then and there. When I get upset or angry in the morning, I do that inventory right then and there. It's something like this. So it says, we vigorously commence this way of living as we clean up the past. We have entered the world of the Spirit. Now it's giving us what our next function is. Our next function is to grow in understanding and effectiveness. This is not an overnight matter. It should continue for our lifetime. Now here's where 49 comes in. Continue to watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. That's the fifth column of the fourth step. When these crop up, we ask God to remove them at once, 6 and 7. We discuss them with someone immediately. Step 5, we make amends if we've harmed anyone. Step 9. Then we resolutely turn our thoughts to someone we can help. Love and tolerance of others is our code. So what that's telling me is, like, when I get that resentment at 8 in the morning, I go off somewhere and I pause and I do a spot check inventory, right? Who am I mad at? Scott. What did he do? He told me Peter was sitting here when I got here. Scared me. What did it affect in me? My self-esteem, my personal, whatever. What part did I play in it? I should have called him. I should, whatever, you know what I mean? Like, he's just another junk like me, but whatever. But that's, I'm taking ownership of that. And then what character defects was glaring, and I make those amends, right? So I do that spot check inventory right then and there. Because this is the deal. Like, I'm sober now, and I used to talk about, you know, I've only done 1 4-step, and I judge people about that. You know, you should, if you've done a thorough 4-step, you wouldn't have to go back and do another 4-step inventory. But that's not true. You know, I've come to realize that that's not true. Some people need to go back in and clean house again. So here's a 10-step promise. Now remember, given who we were when we got here, and like I said, in our Monday night meeting, we do this exercise where we have the guys go back and remember the last 72 hours, 48 hours they were out there in the muckety-muck. We do that every Monday night. Very powerful exercise. And for me, I know exactly where I was, what I was doing, how I was feeling, you know, the hotel, the street, McDonald's across the street, the turnpike's right there, there's trucks coming and going, there's maids knocking on the door. I know I can see that hotel just like I'm sitting right there. And I couldn't stop using, right? I could not stop drinking and drugging. I didn't have a God in my life. But at the time, my prayer to him, or whatever it was please don't wake me up tomorrow or help me. So I've done all the work. I just laid out for you. I just done the step process. I laid all that work out for you. And here's what happens. And we have ceased fighting anything or anyone, even alcohol. Imagine that, right? For this time, sanity will have returned. Now, again, it's important to get somebody that knows what they're talking about with this book. What sanity are they talking about? They're not talking about the crazy things I did after I take a drunk or a drug. They're not talking about my 3 DUIs. They're not talking about my homelessness. They're not talking about none of that stuff. The sanity they're talking about is me knowing that I have this thing. And that when I think about a drink or a drug, I remember what it did to me rather than what it did for me. My sanity has returned concerning drink and drug. And I can do that on my own power. I got evidence that says that. But here it tells me. We will seldom be interested in liquor. If you're a true alcoholic, that's amazing right there. If tempted, we recoil from it as a hot flame. Now listen to these words. We react sanely and normally, and we will find that this has happened automatically. We will see that our new attitude toward liquor has been given us without any thought or effort on our part. It just comes. This is a miracle of it. We are not fighting it, neither are we avoiding temptation. Like you hear people say, I can't go in there because they're serving alcohol. That's crazy. What if you got to do a 12-step call? You're not going to go because they're serving alcohol? You might have to go down to overtime one night and get somebody with somebody else. You still have an alcoholic mind if you have that thought process. This is where they talk about that thing called recovered and recovering. You know what I mean? Like, people want to argue that fact. I don't get into that debate. You know, I'm a student of this book, so I know that I'm recovered from a hopeless state of mind and body. I still have the allergy of the body. If I leave here tonight and go on to celebrate my anniversary tomorrow with a drink, all bets are off. Off to the races. Just because I'm sober 11 years doesn't mean anything. I still have the allergy of the body. What I'm recovered from is that hopeless state of mind. What I'm recovered from is the thought that it'll be different this time. Nobody will know. I could just do one. I could take that half a Xanax. All right, whatever. Whatever that lie I tell myself, because I can't drink on the truth. The truth is, when I drink, bad things happen. I like to drive, because I drive better when I'm drinking for some reason. So I think. I can't drink on the truth. I can't use on the truth. If I tell myself that lie, I pick it up, and I'm off to the races. So I'm recovered from that. So when somebody wants to argue that fact, you don't have to argue. You don't have to debate that. Take them to the book. He says it many times. First edition of the foreword, second edition of the foreword, doctor's opinion. That's not me saying that. That's Bill saying that. So I don't argue that fact. Just pray for that person who's recovering. God willing, they get recovered. So it says, we're not fighting it, neither are we avoiding temptation. We feel as though we have been placed in a position of neutrality, safe and protected. We have not even sworn off. Instead, the problem has been removed. It did not exist for us. We're neither cocky nor we're afraid. That is our experience. That is how we react so long as we keep in fit spiritual condition. Now he's putting that conundrum on it. He's putting that thing on it. We talked about it earlier in the big book where it says when in Bill's story how if they fail to perfect their spiritual life, then alcohol will drink again. Meaning if they fail to do 4 through 12, they're going to drink again. And this is where step 11 comes in. Sought through prayer and meditation, improved my conscious contact with God. The God of my understanding today is different than my God of my understanding in my first year, in my second year, in my third year. It has developed over time. I told you about my first 4 years in recovery where I refused to go to church with Joe. I refused to go to church. I refused to go to Calvary Chapel. I didn't want nothing to do with that stuff. Because to me, religion was crap, you know. I based you guys on Jimmy Baker and Tammy Faye Baker. They didn't get me sober, you know what I mean? I'm sponsoring people, I'm going to meetings, I'm good, Joe. And for 4 years, he would ask me every Sunday, let's go to church. And I'm like, what is wrong with this dude? Like, what doesn't he get? I ain't going. We almost got into a knockdown dragout fight outside the 101 club one night. And but he knew what was going on. He saw that old Keith was creeping back in, right? Because I'm basing this idea about church off an old idea and belief, right? So I go to church on this Sunday. I finally give in, you know, because I go to the casino with a buddy of mine, this guy who can't stay sober. We go to the casino. I'm character assassinating Joe, and I'm listening to this guy. He's in my ear, and yeah, that guy, Joe, he's a whatever. We're just killing Joe. And God came in. I had a moment of clarity. We're sitting there playing poker, and I had a moment of clarity. I look at him. I'm like, what am I doing? Like, this guy can't stay sober. The guy who helped put my hand in God's hands is telling me or asking me to go with him one time. That's it. If I don't like it, I don't have to go back. But he didn't like the fact that I was basing it off the past. I was being a Herbert Spencer, so to speak. If you know who Herbert Spencer is, in the back of the book, Spiritual Experience. He said something like this, contempt, pride, or investigation. That's what I was. Contempt, pride, or investigation. I'm basing what he's asking me on the past. So I go to church with Joe that Easter Sunday. And I could have sworn that they had a camera in our sober house that day. Because everything they were talking about in that sermon was about me. I've been going ever since. 7 years straight now. Every Sunday morning I'm at Calvary. Now that's just my journey. There's all kinds of ways to seek this thing. You know, if you're an alcoholic, this is the best way. But once you get this thing, then we got to go further. There's music. There's books. There's church. There's other people that are spiritual, you know what I mean? There's no set way of doing it. As long as I'm seeking, then I'm doing the deal, right? So it talks about this. It says, it's easy to let up on the spiritual program of action and rest on our laurels. How many of you guys know people have done that? You know, got this thing, doing the deal, and they rest on their laurels. Allie told me about this one speaker I need to listen to. His name is Sandy B. And another guy, Dick S., I think. And he said something, and I've been using it all the time now, especially with the guys at the house. The recuperative powers of the ego is an amazing thing. Think about that statement. The recuperative powers of my ego is an amazing thing, right? I come in here beaten and broken. I'll do anything. And I start getting a little bit better. AA becomes less important, right? Church becomes less important. My sponsees become less important. I start letting what AA gave me take me away from AA. This isn't important anymore. Keith, can you speak for me? No, Rachel, not tonight. I can't do it. I just did a step series for you, Rachel. I can't do it. Now, Keith wanted to say that. When she asked me, can I speak here? I'm like, I just spoke for you 2 months ago. I don't do this. But I don't know. She saw something, you know, in me and what God has done in my life. But that's what that's talking about. Letting up on my spiritual program of action. Like resting on my laurels. It's hit home to me closer now, but before that happened, I would see people come in and just coast, right? I can't coast uphill. I'll never have this thing to the point where I'm immune to it. Like, I'm definitely afraid now. Like, I'm more afraid today than I was ever before of this thing. And I'm going to seek this thing like a drowning man seeks a life preserver, given what I've been going through and what I've seen. Says, we are headed for trouble if we do, for alcohol is a subtle foe. We are not cured of alcoholism. What we really have is a daily reprieve, and he's always putting conditions on it, contingent on the maintenance of our spiritual condition. Now again, when I hear that word maintenance, and I would hear people talk about maintenance of my spiritual condition, to me they're talking about maintaining, right? I can't maintain my spiritual condition, because if I maintain my spiritual condition, I'm not going to grow. I'm not growing when I maintain my spiritual condition. Man, I swear I had the best teachers. And they taught me that. I'm not maintaining anything. It says, every day is a day when we must carry the vision of God's will into all of our activities. How can I best serve thee? Thy will be done. These are the thoughts which must go with us constantly. We can exercise our own willpower. Imagine that, we're getting our own willpower back. At this time. We can exercise our own willpower along this line all we wish. It is a proper use of the will. Much has already been said about receiving strength, inspiration, and direction from him who has all knowledge and power. If you carefully follow directions, there's that word again, follow directions, not suggestions. This book is not about suggestions. My experience. We have begun, because if you tell me it's a suggestion, that means I can do whatever I want. I can pick and choose my way through this thing. Oh, Keith, this is a suggestion. You shouldn't do that. Well, if you're giving me an option, my thinker got me here, I would have probably best choose the worst one. It says, we begin to sense the flow of his spirit into us. To some extent, we have become God conscious. We've begun to develop this vital sixth sense, but we must go further, and that means more action. Now look, what I just read to you, this spirit is flowing within me. This was given to me back on 25. Look at this promise, and then we haven't done anything back on 25. But this is what's possible. The great fact is just this and nothing less, that we have had deep and effective spiritual experiences which have revolutionized our whole attitude toward life, toward our fellows, and towards God's universe. Given who I was when I got here, imagine that right there. The central fact of my life today is the absolute certainty that my Creator has entered into my heart and lives in a way which is indeed miraculous. He has commenced to accomplish those things for me which I could have never done by myself. And I have evidence to support that fact. I'm standing before you today, a sober person, 11 years. That wasn't going to happen given who I was when I got here. I have a relationship with the God of my understanding today that is one that is I mean, I'm speechless by it because, you know, I get up here and I hear my friend Peter and I hear Russell and it lifts for them. You can see it, like it's coming out of their pores, right? And I don't mean to keep referencing them, but you can see that. I also know people that get up here and they tell you about God, blah, 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 all this stuff, and it's like they're puking it out of their mouth, but then they leave this building and they're out there hitting on newcomers and, you know, they're at the casinos and stuff. I was taught that I should be able to tell you about the God of my understanding without saying a word. Without saying a word. Does the song match the dance, so to speak? Right? I love that. Because if I got up here and started quoting scripture, you know it was a fraud. You know it was fake. If I got up here and started saying, my Lord Jesus Christ, Lord and Savior, you know it was a fake. It was a fraud. What I can tell you is that the relationship I have with a God of my understanding is one of... It's amazing. And I don't shout it from the rooftops out there. I don't talk about it. It's in my actions. Now, am I always on the beam, so to speak? No. That's when I need God more. You know what I mean? That's when my character defects show up. Perfect example. The guy you see before you right now, when I go to work, sometimes he goes out the window, right? Out the door. And mind you, I prepare in the morning before I go to work. This is how I was taught, to prepare. I'm going to talk about that. Because you got to have a game plan, this thing called life. I didn't have a game plan when I got here. It was just run, run, run. Take it as it comes. I'm sober today, so I got to have a game plan. What does that look like? In the morning when I wake up, you know, I don't turn on SportsCenter right away. I don't, none of that. My prayer to God, because again, I don't pray art thou and my fathers and all that. My prayer is simple. I roll out of bed, get on my knees. Thank you, Lord, for waking me this morning. Help me keep me sober today and help another alcoholic. Amen. Right? Then when I'm getting ready for work, the book tells me upon awakening, envision my day. So I'll sit outside or I'll sit in another room while she's sleeping and I'll envision my day. Meaning I know when I go to work, I know who I'm going to see. My coworkers, they're every day. My customers come in, I know who's going to be in there every day. Then we got our incidental people, our incidental contacts, whatever. Who are those people going to get when I show up on the scene, right? So I envision that. Sounds good when I leave the house, you know what I mean? Everything is good. I'm on 95, 5 in the morning, 6 in the morning, nobody's out there, so I got road rage. It's a nice ride down 95 from Delray to Atlantic Boulevard. I get to work, life starts happening, people start coming in. So the guy that was serene and peaceful, out the door, gone. What happened to that guy? I was just praying. I've gotten better with it, but I pause today. I walk out back on the dock, look up, and just say, Lord, please. I don't want to be that person. Does it always work? No, because sometimes at work I'm a raving lunatic. But I'm much better than I was. So then it says at night, this is where we do our little inventory. How did I show up today? Who did I hurt? Do I owe an amends? That's when I review my day. I don't do that all the time because I do it during the 10 steps. So when I get home, I don't do that. But I thank God at night for keeping me sober that day. We know people, and like this disease is crazy because like it's been around us or whatever, like this so-called thing called relapse or whatever, but it's hit home for us in the last month. From family members to best friend. And we want to shake these people so bad, like listen, I know where you were, I know what you're going through. But until that person wants it, they're not going to get it. I've learned that. Like, when the book talks about powerless, right? I've learned a new definition of powerless in this last couple months. To the point where It's like, thank you, God, that I'm not in that boat, right? Thank God I'm walking this path with somebody who holds me accountable. Program's totally separate, but we're both seeking the same thing. We got family members who want to talk to us about this thing, right? We can give them all the suggestions in the world, but they're not going to listen. Some of them are not going to listen. Somebody near and dear to us, especially, you know. No, it must be a tough thing for a parent. But somebody near to us is going through it with his son. And I get it, you know. My mom was loving me to death when I got here. Once I did surface that after 8 years, she was sending me money every week, paid my rent at the halfway house. This man took a stand for me and said, no more. I'm not taking another dime from her. You're loving your son to death. Can you imagine telling a mother that? You're loving your son to death? And that's not her motive. She's thinking she's helping me, but she's actually killing me. Well, that's what we're seeing now with this person. And so for our own preservation and our own serenity, we give it to God, but we got to cut him off too. You know what I mean? And that's hard. That is so hard because we have the answer for him. We tell him. He hears, we think sometimes, but at the end of the day, he doesn't hear. His mind goes back to, that's my son, that's my boy. I get it. But at the same time, I know that you're killing him. I know that you're killing your son because you will not stand down. I was working with a sponsor the other day. He's on his fourth step, you know. And I always ask him to ask him, because he's new, to ask yourself this. What do you want? And he looked at me like, what do you mean? I go, what do you want? Why are you trying to get sober? You trying to get the car, the girl, nice house? Like, what's success to you? And he's giving me all this outside stuff. And I looked at him, I just laughed. Because I got it. That was me. I wanted my license back. I wanted a nice job. I wanted a beautiful girl. No God in there. No character building in there. My word meant nothing. I wouldn't have got asked to speak in meetings when I got here, you know. I was a taker. It was all about me. And I come in here, I do a little bit of work in a short amount of time. The book even tells me that. You know, when Abby came to see Bill, he was 2 months sober. You want a question about this God thing, right? If you have any doubts about the God thing, check out the history of AA, coming of age. Check out how this thing came together. The cool thing is, Abby came to see Bill 2 months sober. He didn't stay sober. He passed it on to Bill, and he didn't stay sober. Bill's in Ohio for a business, whatever. He does his business thing. He goes back to the hotel. To the right, the bar, the glasses clanging. And that was Bill's thing. That was Bill's hook. You know, he would go, still a little vicarious pleasure by doing that. But not this time. He looked to his left and saw the phone booth. Got a phone number out of there. I disabled him. She hooked him up with Dr. Bob. Dr. Bob was going to give him 15 minutes. They ended up talking 5 hours. And there the spark for A was sparked. Tell me there's no God. Amazing. Then I look at my own life. In a few short, I don't have that much time. You know, 11 years is nothing. 11 years ago, I had nothing. I weighed 140 pounds. I was living in a halfway house. Today, I've been able to live 2 lifetimes in 1 life. Let me say that again. 2 lifetimes in 1 life. The first 35 years of my life, scumbag. Dirtbag. Again, I had people like they had you, and I said this before, but they talk about this thing called legacy. Like, what's your legacy gonna be? Keith. When I got here, I had no legacy. And I didn't know what that word meant. Legacy to me, you're talking to a Rockefeller or a Gates or one of those hottie people. No. What's my legacy going to be? What's going to live in the hearts and minds of other people for knowing me? It's not going to be my job because I work at a pool supply place. It's not going to be my car because I drive a Kia Optima. Who's going to be at my funeral? What are they going to say about you, Keith? I didn't think about stuff like that when I got here. That wasn't like part of my constitution, so to speak. Number one, it's none of my business what they say, but I tell you this. I know who I was when I got here, and nobody had been at my funeral. I believe today there'll be a couple of people at my funeral. If I was to die tonight, I'd be happy. You know what I mean? I'd be okay. Step 11. Sought through prayer and meditation to improve my conscious contact with God as I understood him. That's the deal. I'm trying to build this relationship with God in my understanding. And I've been leaning on him more lately than I've had probably have ever, you know. I talked about it last time I spoke. I was talking to a lady very dear to us. We call her the Source. Like, I have a sponsor, but, you know, men don't sponsor the same as women. That's just my experience. Like, we don't sponsor emotionally. I call my sponsor when I need tough love. I call the Source when I need to get the emotional answer. And I was talking to her, and she had like 22 years sober at the time. And you know, we were just chatting. And she told me, like, step 3 and step 11 are the most important steps to her today. And I was like, what do you mean by that? Because I thought, for me, 6 and 7 was the most important. Because that to me, that means I'm old self is dying every day. I'm doing step 6 and 7. But she's like, no. She's like, step 3 is the deal. It's where it's at. Because it says it's made a decision to turn your will and your life over to care of God as you understood him. But what does that look like? You know, she asked me that question. Like, what does that look like for you, Keith? What does that look like? Like, you can read the words, you can say it, but what does that look like? And I thought about that. And at the time, I was like, I don't know. You know? Yeah, I get up in the morning, I do all that stuff I talked about, but am I carrying God's vision? Are you getting a true representation of me all the time? Obviously, that's perfection, so no, but am I striving for that? Is that my constitution? Is that my mission statement for life, so to speak? Some days, yes. Some days, no. Just to be honest with you. Some days, I'm not the most spiritual. And that's okay. You know, if you're new, you know, we talk about God a lot, and I talk about God, and if that scares you, that's okay. You know what I mean? That's okay. You don't have to believe right now. Because we talk about evidence. We talk about evidence. And usually it's bad evidence. Let's look at the evidence, Keith. Let's look at the evidence you've been able to produce when you got here. But there's also good evidence. There's awesome evidence. James, I've known for 6 years. They say we know him and wouldn't mix. I wouldn't mix with James. You know? But him and Rachel are doing great, great stuff, you know, service. These ladies here I met, they've been coming faithfully. Didn't know me from Adam. Every week they're here. Normally wouldn't mix. Peter brings this guy to Unity, right? He's from my hometown, Rochester, New York. I had just had an episode at the Unity Church like 2 weeks prior to him coming here. He was talking about with him and James before. Where, and here is another God story. I was doing the second step at Unity. About 150, 200 people. Yeah, Rachel. I'm going along nicely. I'm reading out of the book. I'm in my groove, right? God had better plans. He just erased my mind. And I want to tell you, like the book talks about fear and all this stuff. And I'm sitting up there, I'm talking, the pews are full, the exit's that way, there's nothing behind me but a wall. I can't leave. And I'm talking, and all of a sudden, nothing. It was like he just wiped my mind and shut my mouth. And all eyes were on me. And literally, I wanted to die. I mean, literally. In my mind, I'm cursing her. I'm talking to James in my head like, yeah, we're going to have words after. And then my thought was, as I'm sitting there with my head down and I'm thinking, and I'm like, man, I'm telling myself, I'm having my conversation in my head to them. I'm done. I'm never doing this again. You got to get somebody else. I just did 2 steps. Thanks for having me, but I'm done. Like, that's it. And I don't know what came over me, but I just put my head down. And I said, Lord, get me through this, please. So I closed the big book. And God has a sense of humor, because the next thing I said, I was like, says something like, I don't want to give you head, I want to give you my heart, or something like that. And the whole room just died. And that gave me, whatever, the courage to finish. But I tell that story to say this, right? So in my mind, it was a complete disaster. Because we can make things up in our head. You know what I mean? The way I see it, it was a disaster. Like, I'm going to be talked about for years. Like, that guy Keith sucked. It was horrible. It was funny. He froze up there. He's supposed to be some big book thumper. Like, I'm just like, oh. That's what Keith made up in his head, right? Because I'm crazy. But no. The meeting is over. These people line up. And I'm getting pretty much the same feedback. Like, that was the realest thing I've ever seen. I saw God come back, and you know what I mean? Like, they were saying this stuff, and I'm just, like, blown away by it. Like, I'm like, huh. And she put it perfectly. She's like, God used you tonight to show the newcomer or something about fear. Or something. Whatever she said, it was poetic, because she's a writer. And I was like, you would see it that way. You weren't the one mortified up there, right? But I pushed through. I persevered, right? With God, anything's possible. Anything is possible. I've been able to do things in this program and that's been truly amazing. Like, my family's back in my life today. I talked about this a couple weeks ago. We're all back together, you know. They call me when they need something as far as emotional support, advice. That wasn't going to happen, given who I was when I got here. Today I have integrity. Didn't think much about that when I got here. Today my word means something, right? Today I try not to judge as, and again, I keep referencing Peter, but he said some nuggets. And I would sit up here and I'd be out there, right? And if a speaker would be speaking, and they wouldn't be coming from this book, and they wouldn't be coming with the solution, and they just become with the mess, I'm character assassinating them. I'm sitting there tapping down, like, are you kidding me? This guy needs to shut up. You know what I mean? Like, but he said something one time at the Unity Church that made me take it back. I'm no better than that person that's up there speaking. I'm just a drunk like that person. They may not know the truth. They've been sober for however long. So, who am I to judge that person? And that's been the theme a lot, too, with this last couple months. Like, we're all just a bunch of drunks, you know? And it's not just in AA. I mean, we're talking about it. It's not in just AA where people gossip and character assassinate and talk. That's the world we live in today. Turn on CNN, MSNBC, Fox. It's everywhere. Let me put that person down and feel better about myself. And that's the spiritual action in step 10. I'm doing that to get focus off of me by me doing that. And that's what I did last Monday when I was talking about this person who they don't talk about God and all this stuff. Like, what was that? Like, what was I trying to What was I trying to accomplish from that? So I owe that lady an amends when I see her. And she's going to get an amends. And I'm telling you that story because I did it publicly. So I'm telling on myself publicly. I don't want to sit up here and ramble. But again, if you're new, this is possible. If one of us can get drunk, I mean sober, we all can get sober. It's just how surrendered are you? And what do you want to do for your recovery? Ask yourself that. What do you want to do for your recovery? What do you want to sacrifice for your recovery? That word sacrifice, huge, when I got here. Because again, I had men that didn't sell out on me. They didn't just tap me on the head and say, there, it's going to be all right. No, Keith, it's not going to be all right, given who you are and how you think. Your thing is going to kill you. What do you want to sacrifice, Keith? That toxic relationship, I can't give her up. I love her. That job that where I'm lying on the phone to people, I can't give that up. I'm making money. Halfway house. You want me to move in a halfway house? What are you talking about? Today that stuff doesn't run me. It's not about what you think about me today, you know. It isn't. It's what my God thinks of me. What am I doing to honor him? Some days better than others, but I'm not the man I was when I got here. I'm not. All I did was show up and do the work, but through him, he took me from the scrap heap of life. Took me off that scrap heap of life like some clay. And he's still molding me. He's still molding me. God willing, I'll be sober next year. And I'll have a different story to tell you about my relationship with this God and my understanding. It's ever evolving. So don't sell yourself short if you're new. You know what I mean? Get with people that are armed with the facts about themselves and this program. Do the work, and amazing things will come to pass. Thanks.